Thank you. Hello, I'm Jacob Cole, and I'm here to tell you a story of landscape-scale windblown dust emissions, a program developed to address it and the technologies used within that program. So my actual title is Implementation of State-of-the-Art Soil Studying on Unconventional Soils, Applied for Monitoring, Modeling, and Mitigating Dust Emissions. I'm with an outfit called Formation Environmental. So we got a problem. We got a problem. It's a landscape scale problem. It's a landscape scale problem, a problem with desiccation. Working in a basin with the largest ag to urban water transfer on the books that are hitting in effect at the end of this year. And what that really results in is a foot decline in the elevation of this lake each year for the next about 30 years, resulting in exposure of over 100 square miles of barren, saline, and unvegetated playa. So what does that mean? That's really a problem. It's kind of a respiratory problem, a dust health issue. Kids in this basin currently, a majority of them have asthma as a result of windblown dust, and that's even before this water transfer really hits the ground. So we're working we might not be able to solve the whole problem, but we can at least prevent it from getting worse. And being the soil scientists we are, we boil it down to fundamental physical processes that emit the dust, and that's the one of saltation. So saltation is a process of bouncing sands. So you get one single grain of sand, get enough wind or surface friction velocity going on to pick it up, get it to bounce, hits the ground. When it hits the ground, it delivers kinetic energy, dislodges or fragments particles, and the smaller particles go up into suspension. Those are the particles that get in people's lungs. But we're going to focus on saltation because that's something we can control. So saltation, one single grain of sand, times that by all the loose grains of sand out there, you have a buzzsaw across the playa surface. Right? So we're out here to stop the buzzsaw. Right? So the big problem, landscape scale problem, real health effects. And our solution is a proactive one. We call it the Salt and Sea Air Quality Mitigation Program. Has three fundamental steps, and it's an annual cycle. And we start off with the emissions monitoring estimation, which is how much and where from sort of dust problem. Proactive dust control problems, like, okay, now we know where it's coming from, how do we actually stop the buzzsaw, right? At least plan to stop the buzzsaw, and then let's get it done. Let's do it, implement it on the ground. So starting with emissions monitoring and estimation, fundamental problem is that we're working in a basin with huge data scarcity. And we don't know as well, when you have a little piece of dust that emits and it gets up into a dust plume, where does that dust come from? It's hard to know where that dust comes from. So this is the fundamental data scarcity, and knowing where our dust comes from is the big problem to this branch. So we're going to solve it by monitoring dust concentrations, determine the emissivity of our different surfaces, estimate dust emissions, and then once we have that, we can locate areas for dust control. So monitoring dust emissions starts with your fancy meteorological stations, where we have two different data sets, or your wind speed and direction at 10 meters up here, and we've got a fancy thing here that measures PM10 concentration in the air. So have these stratified around your basin or your domain. You can have locations where you can just see where the high wind speeds are coming from. So our wind rows, here we see that for the south side of the sea, wind directions for the high wind events are coming from the west. You can do a side-by-side and actually look at the PM10 concentration. So where you have high wind speeds from a given direction and you have high PM10 concentrations at that same time, that's where your dust is coming from. So monitoring is a piece of our work here. Determine the emissivity of our surfaces. So interesting enough, out there we have this salt accumulation. So the surface crust develops. Physical crust develops, where you go from no crust to smooth, to weak botrytal to botrytal. You're going along this development spectrum where the thickness of your crust increases, the hardness of your crust increases, as well as the loose material on the crust is starting to get incorporated into like this salt soil matrix. And we go out there and we slap one of these on. It's called a Portable In-Situ Wind Erosion Lab. And what it does is it spins the annular ring and it exerts a wind speed or surface friction velocity upon the surface of the soil, and it counts the amount of dust, so it counts the amount of PM10 flux that emits off of the surface. You can do lots of really interesting things when you have a guy out here describing the surface when this thing is running. So we get the data off of this, and we have to explain to ourselves and to others the variability of the emissivity in our data set in 2D space. We found that we can explain the variability much in these different crust type classes. So we have a crust type class on the X, log PM10 flux, so this is like the value of an exponent, if you will, a log base 10 exponent. And you can see over here, this is our surface friction velocity. So we're turning the dial up on our pipe, so and see how much dust kicks off. And what we can see is that there's a distinct difference between no crust, smooth crust, weak crust, and botryoidal. So weak botryoidal and botryoidal. So as the salt crust develops, it reduces, and then you have something weird called barnacle beds because soil. We got two other very important things that we can pay attention to, intuitively make sense. If you have a moist surface or a wet surface, it's a lot less emissive than a dry one. And if you have a sandy surface or a surface with loose sand on it, you have a much more emissive surface than one that does not. And it seems like we are making the world super simple, but there's a reason why. The reason why is that we can map it. Oh. Yep, we can map it using remote sensing technologies. So satellite imagery, you build a machine learning random forest model that can essentially tell you for each pixel in this domain, what is your crust type? What is your loose sand surface presence? What is your soil moisture status? Okay, so now we have the data, we have the remote sensing to tell you what is where. If we look at this, you know, 5 crust types, 2 sand types, 2 moisture types, you times that, 5 times 2 times 2, that's 20 different relationships. And you have all these data sparse out, and you can start to fit these functions. where you can, for each type of combination, you can pick essentially your summary statistic you wish to run your model on. So you have a mean, median, max, minimum, first quantile, third quantile, you choose. Let's talk about the median. And so we got our function that tells you, okay, you give me a surface friction velocity, I'll give you a PM10 plus for every pixel in our domain. Okay. Now we need to know what our surface friction velocity is in space. And so we turn to, after playing around with a couple different options, this model called the Weather Research and Forecasting Model. The reason why we like it is physically based. Fundamentally physical based, the boundary conditions tie into larger data sets. You can use data sets within your domain to nudge your model. And it can essentially take in the physics of the land surface all the way to the highest levels of the atmosphere. So we use this model to be able to build a half a kilometer, about half a kilometer gradient subdomain. And it computes hourly the 10 meter wind speed or the surface friction velocity for the entire year. We're running those on our computers right now. it takes a while. so this is how it works. We have wind speed or surface friction velocity on our surface. We have the rule set we just showed you. You apply those. U-star gives you a PM10 flux. Use your PM10 flux in space. So we drive this home. We do this for every hour of the day, 7 days a week, every week of the year. And we're running on it. Now we don't have it done yet, but this is kind of a teaser on where we're going with determining the emissivity of different surfaces. Okay, so, well, that was a lot, first off. But now we have a really nice tool where we can say, okay, where you have locations of unique combinations of emissive surface and the wind to drive it. Allows for us to focus our resources where they're needed most. Where do we plan, right? Where we need to, right? And this is what feeds into the next step of our domain here. And the fundamental problem here in proactive dust control planning is that we're working in areas that are being exposed now. So topography, survey grade topography, forget it. Soil map, NRCS out there, it was underwater, right? So we have a huge issue of data scarcity where we need to characterize our site. It's going to be a big part of it. Once we have our site characterized, we need to pick dust control measures that are going to work on scale at those sites. We got to do some modeling to figure out how to actually design our different dust control measures, and then we got to make sure that they actually remain effective monitoring. So site characterization, you know, we have these fancy other things, soil, and topography, predominant wind direction, depth to groundwater, and but let's just be honest, it's about soil, right? Okay, so these other ones are also very important, and I'm just going to breeze past them. We started with photogrammetric DEMs. That's not where we ended up, but that's where we started. And they were useful, but it has its limitations. These meteorological stations, we use those to determine what direction our wind or large wind speeds are coming from, as well as what directions we're willing to kind of move things around to fit the site itself. And then depth to groundwater, when we're talking about establishing vegetation along these playas, your depth to groundwater is going to be imperative. And we have a huge shallow depth to groundwater program. But let's talk about soil. Fundamentally, soil, there's no available soils data out there. We took an approach last year of starting with this electromagnetic inductance probe, drove it around with a little RTK on it, and mapped soil apparent electrical conductivity with depth. So we use the soil apparent electrical conductivity with depth to kind of stratify our sampling, the heterogeneity with depth to stratify our sampling. And we go out there with a Giddings direct push probe, undisturbed sample, take a core back to the lab. Back in the lab, we have a photo, high resolution photo station. And you could load this thing up into your hard thing, you see like individual grains of sand, really nice. But the really kind of piece de resistance is the spectroradiometer, AST spectroradiometer. What's really nice about this is that it takes you about boop, 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 boop. Every 5 centimeters you're going boop, boop, boop. You can get yourself a reading of reflectance versus wavelength. You can correlate this to percent clay as well as percent sand. So in a matter of about 15-20 minutes, you can get yourself a nice depth resolution percent sand silt clay data set for each soil core you pulled. Allows for us to throw that in a map and be able to figure out where, at least in the top 2 feet, we have a coarse soil and fine soils. So by fine soils, soil cohesion is large. You can start to throw a ridge and you can start to pull together. Right, and fine, of course, soil is not so much, but the hydraulic conductivity is large, internal drainage is large. So we plan dust control measures that require no water on fine textured soils, and we plan water-based or vegetation-based dust control measures, hedgerows, if you will, on soils that are coarse. Okay, so we know what we're doing where. How do we specify what we need to reduce the saltation, the buzz saw? How do we stop the buzz saw, right? So there's this handy dandy piece of work done by the ARS. They made this model that really solves this physical process. You can solve, we've automated it. It's really nice. So you can explore sensitivities. You can run 100,000 model runs in a day and you know, do what you want to do. Essentially solve the problem with a big hammer. Right, so automating a model is what we did here, simple model. We can solve for things like how far do we space our vegetation barriers, how far do we space our ridge heights to be able to take care of the winds that are experienced at that site. Oh, and this is just a graphical depiction of how we new design a few things. We can look at normalized saltation, plus 0 is stop, 1 is full saltation happening at the background grade. And you can, we're willing to accept this black line. You can pick, you know, your ridge spacings or your vegetation barrier spacings accordingly. So dust control modeling. Moving to dust control performance monitoring. We started off with UA-based LiDAR. We all talked about this UAV-based remote sensing. We use LiDAR. It allows for us to determine how high those ridge heights are and how deep those troughs are. Really rough topography, right? This isn't high resolution, right? We need it. This is where we learned we needed LiDAR, not photogrammetry wouldn't do the trick for our solution. So RTK GPS in black, LiDAR in green, photogrammetry in magenta, huge differences. So we need the LiDAR, and you can essentially, once you do a scan like that, map ridge height and space. You can apply this quarterly and see how fast your ridge heights are degrading through time. Another interesting thing is that you can actually, the cloudiness or the random roughness of this area actually provides dust control. It reduces the wind, so it makes the wind path more tortuous, if you will. And there's these handy dandy little structure for light sensors. You can get that on the ground. You do it on a LiDAR, and you can also map that in space. Pretty handy for our solution, for our problem, I should say. So, we got a plan. We know how to make sure the plan is still working, right? How do we get it done? It's actually pretty simple. Two steps. Relatively, we've got to develop buildable drawing sets, then you got to work with people. Science, yeah, this is just good relationships. So buildable drawing sets, we've designed for this year over 1,000 acres of dust control. And what we got to do is develop buildable drawing sets. How do we build our roads? How do we do the tillage? How do we do our irrigation systems out here at scale with the different water sources we have and the resources we have? And we just start working with people. Collaborate with people. Start doing it on the ground, figuring it out. And so just in brief, The summary of the technologies that we use in our program to address the landscape scale wind erosion problem is there's no substitution for real meteorological data. Portable Institute Wind Erosion Lab, that little dome, we couldn't quantitatively, you know, develop PM10 flux without it. A remote sensing applied surfaces, weather research and forecasting using that model to predict wind speed and across the entire domain, huge. Electromagnetic inductance for the soil mapping, spectroradiometry for the soil texture, very fast with depth. Automated our single event wind erosion evaluation program, understanding our physical processes, as well as UAV mounted LiDAR, priceless for our application. So with that, thank you for your time.
Questions for Jacob?
Which aspect?
The whole thing, right?
About a year.
Yeah.
Honestly, so we got. We talked about monitoring. There's monitoring of the controlling factors of the emissions, and then there's actual monitoring of how much sand is moving through your domain. We're throwing those out as well. I didn't show you them, but those are going out in about 2 weeks, and then we'll know in about a year's time at the end of the next dust season what's been happening.
The spatial resolution of your ground truth measurements?
Spatial resolution of our ground truth measurements. We did a couple of different types of sampling. Transect sampling at about 10 different transects around the sea at about 40 meters from along the transect. And opportunistic sampling for another thing I didn't show you, it's called source delineations.
More questions? If it is not, I would like to thank Jacob.
Thank you.